they won. They took our money. They threw it away.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! This thing on? Yeah, I guess so. It's Friday. Hey, everybody. This is live programming on the horn, the only live programming you're going to get for the day. I hope I can suffice. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm tickled to pieces to be with you. And unfortunately, I got to tell you, I think we have a problem here. Just 1 second. Stand by. Yeah, the phones are down. And, boy, sometimes you just feel a little snake bit, don't you? I was supposed to be talking with Robert Borisage, like, now. And the phones took a powder. Yeah, no kidding. From the Campaign for America's Future, we were going to talk about the bailout. But the phones are dead. I don't mean to sound like a prima donna or a baby or anything, but this is a little frustrating. But, you know, we're going to be 3 years old at the end of this month, and dadgum, we'll make it. We're going to keep on going, but we're going to fix this one way or the other, or I'm going to bust in the process. You know, this really does throw you out of your game. I mean, I know, you're never supposed to let them see you sweat. You know, they're not supposed to, the magician never tells how the tricks are done. Look, you're going to try to call the program in a few minutes, right? Well, you're not going to get through. And we're just straight up that way. So, yeah, I know. I should probably learn that I need to, you know, check it. But anyway. I guess that's another thing to add to the checklist. Make sure phones work. So, anyway, I watched the so-called debate again on TV today, just like I watched the previous one. And I double-checked with Mark Levin because he's got congressional experience. But I noticed the damnedest thing today. The Repiglickens were letting people speak in favor of and against the Wall Street Welfare Queen bailout bill. The Democrats, Mm-mm, no, baby. Unless you were for the bill, the only thing, unless you were for the bill, and the only thing you could do is stand up and ask the question. No advocacy in favor of rejecting that bailout boondoggle. That piece of garbage. That howling monstrosity that got hustled through the Congress. And come on, let's face facts. You know why they hustled it through the Congress? You know why, right? We want to go home. We've worked too hard. It's time to go home. We don't want to come back till January. So I tell you what, given congressional rules, everybody go home. How about a general strike until Congress convenes again? Do you get to go home on the third day of October and not lift a damn finger until January? Do you? Because I don't. I don't think you do either.
But they were lonely. Poor little Congress critters were lonely. They were very sad. They were homesick. I need to go home and go to the local festivals and walk in the parade and make sure that my useless ass gets returned to Congress so I can give more welfare to Wall Street if they need me. Please let us go. We'll pass anything, George. Just please.
And they did. And they did, yeah. Lottie in the chat room, you're dead right. This bailout's like getting robbed at knife point in an alley just as the cops show up, but instead of helping you, the cops put a gun to your head and tell you to give the thief your wallet. We get robbed twice. Hey, Muriel, where's that egress? I seen the sign outside. It said, this way to the egress, $700 million a ticket, and we paid our ticket money. And that was a hell of a sign, too. I wanted to see that there egress. I mean, it had big old wings like a turkey buzzard, but it had a head like a copperhead snake and cloven hooves like the devil himself. I wanted to see that there egress, but instead, I don't know. I think we took a wrong turn somewhere in that there tunnel, Muriel, because we just wound up outside the circus, and now there's some feller up there says he's from Wall Street, wants us to buy the ticket to get back in again. I want to see that egress. Dadgummit. 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 And, of course, I heard a lot of Democrats stand up and say, we don't know if this is going to work, but we got to do something. What? That's the kind of crazy crap I heard in the so-called debate last night from the Caribou Barbie. Miss Winky. Yeah, that's the new name, Miss Winky. You know, there's an old thing, you know, the first thing you learn, no, not the first thing you learn, you had to learn your lines, but somewhere along the way, if you take any theater training, they'll tell you, you know, you never look the audience in the eye. When you never break the fourth wall, but if you have to look out that way, yonder, a ship, make sure you don't look at the audience. On the other hand, if you're addressing a group and you're trying to, and you're trying to establish intimate, you know, one-on-one rapport with a group, which is kind of tough to do, the trick is to pick a spot about 12 inches above people's head on the back wall and look at that, and everybody who's in the direction of your gaze will think that you're looking at them. And that is what the Ceradactyl, Caribou Barbie, Mussolini, what have you, Miss Winky, did last night. And if you want to catch it real good and solid, all you got to do is the guy Clyde and Wally and Dookie over at WD40.com, DUBYA, the numeral 4, the numeral 0.com. These guys have been doing aces work. Well, they always, but lately it's just been astonishing. And they've got a slow-mo capture going over there of the earring swinging, little bangs flipping. I mean, winky thing that she did last night. God, she looks like some. It's a come on. I mean, it was. There's no difference between that and what goes on the corner of a certain street in whatever town in America, and you know where, and you know the red and the light. There's no difference between that come on wink and a hooker's promise. Shoot. But I mean, you watch it in slow mo, and it's almost entrancing, guys. And some ladies too. I don't know, but yeah, I love Dookie's caption for it. Mavericks don't wink. Hey, sailor, you wanna date? Winking? Yeah. Oh, and by the way, just in a form of debate follow-up, something last night when I wasn't rolling a recording, shame on me, something just didn't seem quite, you know, right when she was talking about, when Caribou Barbie was talking about Afghanistan, and she said, General McClellan in Afghanistan says blah, 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 when she was trying to say that the surge needs to be done in Afghanistan. Remember that? I remember that. General McClellan. She very clearly said, General McClellan. And there's only one problem. The guy running the show is General McKernan. McClellan, McKernan, McCain, you know, all those Macs. Nah, phones are still busted. All those Macs. I get so confused. But there was a General McClellan. There was a General McClellan who, for a short time, ran the Army, the Grand Army of the Potomac, the Union Army, at the beginning of the Civil War. And what a piece of work. Yeah, this is the one that she remembered. Yeah. Not General McKernan, General McClellan. Why might she remember General McClellan? Well, you know, from the Don't Know Much About History department. How about a quote from General McClellan upon entering Western Virginia? It is noted that as he implemented plans to invade the region, he triggered his first serious political controversy, McClellan did, by proclaiming to the citizens that his forces had no intentions of interfering with personal property, including slaves. This is the quote from General McClellan, and you know, it really, even though he went on to run as a Democrat in 1864, this really does belong in the Repig-Lickin' Hall of Shame. Notwithstanding all that has been said by the traitors to induce you to believe that our advent among you will be signalized by interference with your slaves, understand one thing clearly. Not only will we abstain from all such interference, but we will, on the contrary, with an iron hand, crush any attempted insurrection on their part. Remember, she couldn't remember the Dred Scott decision? You know, I was absent in history that day at the University of Moose Lips. That's our Sarah. That's Miss Winky. Hey, buddy. Well, I just don't, you know. Jesus. So, that's where we begin this evening. Look, the phones may be down, but your emails are more than welcome. I've got a few to share with you already. Oh, by the way, but this from the fine folks of the American Family Association. Now, Chairman Barney Frank in the House, he just bailed out the Wall Street billionaires that the Repig-Lickin' Party's so fond of. Dear Bob, the more we learn about the financial mess our government is in, the more we see how the liberals got us in this crisis and now want the government to get us out. What we need is a thorough investigation of this matter. Those found breaking the law need to be prosecuted. Read this here article concerning Barney Frank from the Boston Globe to understand better why we are in this mess. Well, you know what that's going to be about. Nah, honey, the phones are dead. No, they're dead. Thank you, dear. Now, would you do me a favor, please?
Yes, I will.
Take yonder cell phone.
Yes.
Please place a call to this number. Just a moment, folks. Okay, just a moment here. Let me hit print on this thing. Guys, I hate to say it, but it's not looking good for the show tonight.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. No, honey, it's not looking good for the show tonight. For right now, if you please, go and call Mr. Borisaj. Thank you, dear. I do want to let you know a little bit of what's going to be going on this weekend, because it's going to be quite interesting and quite exciting. We will be having the third mountain blessing on Gauley Mountain Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern Time in Anstead, West Virginia. And I got to talking with John Fox last night, and I think we're going to be able to do something pretty novel. What we're going to do is we've got a little gizmo here. We got lots of gizmos. Some of them work. What we're going to do, I'm sorry, it's very frustrating to see the phones just blink away down the hunt group line. One, line two, line three, ad infinitum, and know that I can't do a damn thing about it, especially, you know, when you're running a call-in program. Now, what we're going to do Sunday, however, check us out live, please. Check us out live so that you can hear the live broadcast of the Mountain Blessing. Shouldn't take more than an hour, but we're going to we'll have live audio of Father Roy and Father Stan's remarks, and we will also have video. I know we will be shooting video, probably some others, and some good friends of the program, our professional videographers, are coming down. I don't know if they want me to give out their names yet or not, so I'll wait. They'll be coming down, and we will have we'll have professionally shot video as well. We're looking for a real good crowd. I'm hoping we get a real good crowd, and I have no reason to think that the Coal Thugs won't do what the Coal Thugs did last time, and that is to try to shout down the ceremony. Fully expected. Coal Thugs behave like, well, thugs. So that'll be coming up, and if you don't catch it live, you'll be able to catch it in rerun. And also, I mentioned to Ben Birch last night about putting the audio from the Rally for Green Jobs from Charleston a couple of weeks ago. That will be finally going up on the archive, and you can download that and listen to the citizens talk about what it means to bring green jobs to the heart of coal country. So I hope you'll tune in for that. John Fox will be engineering and producing. We may talk some back and forth as well. You want to know about sacrifice? The time difference between here and Sydney is rather profound now. Nonetheless, John is literally going to be getting up in the wee small hours of the morning where he lives to make sure that he can engineer. See, Agnes could be back here in the studio, but I hate leaving Agnes behind. Spouses don't do that to each other. She deserves to be part of this process. So we're going to be together like we should be, and that means that John will get up in the wee small hours of the morning to make sure that the program gets to you. We'll be talking to some of the folks. We'll be talking to a lot of the folks, I hope. And if the coal thugs behave like coal thugs behave, you'll hear them too. In fact, if they've got enough guts to speak into a microphone, because remember they are thugs after all, and they are mostly cowards, then you might actually hear some of them, you'll probably hear some mouth breathing along the way too, but you'll hear them talking about how coal keeps our economy going. We can't do that, coal. Coal keeps the lights on. And we'll let them have their say. I'll let them have their say. apparently they want their say. They're willing to scream down a priest and stop a legitimate ecumenical religious service. So, you know, maybe if we just talk to them a little bit and find out what they think. Maybe that'll make a difference. But either way, any way you slice it, that's what'll be happening on Sunday. And I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, from Cossack, General McClellan was an excellent training general. He should never have had a field command. He could sure train him up, but he couldn't fight him worth a damn. And that's the truth. He got the command after he had rather decisively marched through Western Virginia, which is now West Virginia, and had pretty much settled things down there. Lincoln gave him the job, and he trained, and he marched, and he formationed, and he trained, and he marched, and they marched, and they trained, and they dug, and they trained, and they marched, and they dug. And he built a sizable army, but then he didn't want to do anything with it, and he was notorious for overestimating the size of the opposition. Hence, when Lincoln received complaints some years later about Ulysses Grant and the fact that some said he was the drunk, you know, they said, Mr. President, why won't you fire that drunk? Lincoln answered with two words. He fights. McClellan wouldn't fight. But that's the closest approximation that I can come to for why Mussolini decided that General McClellan was in charge of the field in Afghanistan. But Lord, all that winking aside, and frankly, I don't want to be winked at by Joe Biden. You know, I mean, no, not really. All winking aside, Joe sort of mopped the floor with her, didn't he? I mean, she wouldn't answer a question. She couldn't answer a question. And now she's complaining about the Katie Couric interview.
Well, you know, I wasn't really asked any of those questions questions of substance that where I could have, you know, shown them our vision for the future of these United States.
Yeah, I know. Just a little bit crazy, isn't it? So, I'm in kind of a pickle here. I mean, I can fill a Bobster 3 hours. You know that. You've heard it happen. But I really wanted to be talking with you guys about what it means, what last night meant, what the bailout boondoggle meant today. And I tell you what, Agnes was fit to be tied earlier today when News Ninja Susan sent the story in of Addie Polk. Dennis Kucinich mentioned Addie earlier. Addie Polk, 90 years old. Addie Polk lives in Akron, Ohio. Lives in a 110-year-old house. There's a photograph on it on the CNN website. A few years ago, she got bamboozled by those hucksters at Countrywide into taking out a mortgage on the house she owned, as well as a line of credit. And she missed a couple of payments, and Fannie Mae took over the note. And then Fannie Mae foreclosed, and the sheriff's deputies kept coming to the door to evict her from her home, this 90-year-old lady. And they would leave the notice, and then they'd come back and see that the notice was gone, so they knew that they knew she was in there. And ambulatory. Then this last time through, they heard a bang. And one of her neighbors, Robert Dillon, who's 62, after the bang, he said he was afraid she'd fallen or something, and he used his ladder to climb in a second-story bathroom window. And he was calling for her as he went through the house, and he didn't hear her. Then he found her lying on a bed. And he could see that she was breathing. And he saw the gun. And then he saw the blood. Dylan told reporters, he said then, oh no, Miss Polk must have done shot herself. God almighty. But that's okay. If you were listening to Guy James the other day, you know that these mortgage hustlers threw humongous parties. In fact, a subsidiary of AIG, even as we speak, is partying hardy, partying down at a place that is described as the only five-star Michelin resort in California, where the rooms start, baby, at $565 a night. Start! You know, that's a broom closet. If you want the honor bar and the little mint on your pillow and so forth, you're into a grand. Partying away. Yeah, they are. Remarking on Addie Polk, Dennis Kucinich said this bill does nothing for the Addie Polks of the world, and he's right. It doesn't. He said this bill fails to address the fact that millions of homeowners are facing foreclosure, are facing the loss of their home. This bill will take care of Wall Street, and the market may go up for a few days, but democracy is going downhill. By the way, the market went in the tank again today by to the tune of 158 points or so. And that was with the bailout a sure thing. What does that tell you? Told Dennis Kucinich something. I saw a press release from him earlier today. And thank God somebody out there is still talking a little bit of common sense and a little bit of truth. Because he asked a very, very trenchant question. He simply asked, has the Congress of the United States been manipulated by Wall Street? Yeah, I'd say that's a safe bet, Dennis. Absolutely. Here's his statement, just for the record. He said, the public is being led to believe that Congress has reconsidered its position because we have before us a better bill than we had a few days ago. It's the same bill plus hundreds of new pages for hundreds of millions of tax breaks. What does this have to do with the troubles of Wall Street? Driven by fear, we're moving quickly to pass a bill which may produce a temporary uptick for the market, but nothing for millions of homeowners whose misfortunes are at the center of our economic woes. People do not have money to pay their mortgages. After this passes, they will still not have money to pay their mortgages. People will still lose their homes while Wall Street is bailed out. The central flaw of this bill is that there are no stronger protections for homeowners and no changes in the language to ensure that the Secretary has the authority to compel mortgage servicers to modify the terms of mortgages, and there are no stronger regulatory changes to fix the circumstances that allowed this to happen. We should have created a mechanism for our government to take a controlling interest in mortgage-backed securities and use our power to work out a new deal for the homeowners. We could have done this. We should have done this, but we didn't. And Dennis, I know it breaks your heart as much as it breaks mine to say it, but, and we won't. Dennis went on to say, now millions of Americans will face the threat of foreclosure without any help. And the numbers will soon rise for a number of reasons. Not only because of the Alt-A jumbo mortgages, which will soon be reset at higher interest rates, but because the London Interbank Offered Rate, the LIBOR, is pushing up rates on adjustable mortgages, and more than half the U.S. adjustable mortgage rates are tied to LIBOR. Homeowner defaults will grow in significant numbers. Let's see if Congress will be as quick to help homeowners on Main Street as they were to help speculators on Wall Street. Now the government will have to borrow $700 billion from banks with interest to give banks a $700 billion bailout, and in return, the taxpayers get $700 billion in toxic debt. The Senate improved the bailout by giving tax breaks to people in foreclosure. People in foreclosure need help paying their mortgage. They don't seek tax breaks. Across our nation, foreclosures continue to devastate our communities. People are losing their jobs, and the prices of necessities are skyrocketing. This legislation, just like the one we defeated last week, will do nothing to solve the problem plaguing American families or help them to get out from underneath the oppressive debt they've been forced to take on. Unfortunately, there's been no discussion of the underlying debt-based economy and the role of our monetary system in facilitating the redistribution of wealth upwards. It is not as though we had no choice but to pass the bill before us. We could have done this differently. We could have demanded language in the legislation that would have empowered the Treasury to compel mortgage servicers to rework the terms of mortgage loans so homeowners could avoid foreclosure. We could have put regulatory structures in place to protect investors. We could have stopped the speculators. Hear that again. We could have stopped the speculators. This bill represents an utter failure of the democratic process. It represents the triumph of special interest over the triumph of the public interest. It represents the inability of government to defend the public interest in the face of great pressure from financial interests. We could have recognized the power of government to prime the pump of the economy to get money flowing through our society by creating jobs, health care, and major investments in green energy. What a lost opportunity! What a moment of transition away from democracy and towards domination of America by global economic interests. Dennis closed by saying, years ago in a Cleveland neighborhood, I saw a hand-scrawled sign above a cash register in a delicatessen. The sign said, "In God we trust, all others pay cash." The sign above the speaker's rostrum reads, "In God we trust, but we are paying the cash to Wall Street." It is not as if we had no other choice but to pass this bill. If you're in a thanking mode or mood or thanking as part of your daily routine, I reckon you can thank God for Dennis Kucinich, or thank dog for Dennis Kucinich, or thank Allah or Yahweh or Krishna or Buddha or the tree spirits or rock or the possum gods or, the beaver deity, whatever. Thank him, her, or it, or they for Dennis Kucinich, because there was one honest voice. There was one honest voice. A lone voice crying in the wilderness, as the book says. Oh, there were others. There were others. Donna Edwards, newly minted progressive liberal member of Congress from Maryland, stood up. She was allowed to speak by Barney Frank so that she could throw him a softball question that he could then field and hand back to her by saying, "Oh, yeah, we're going to take care of that." Yeah. Wink. Wink. Wink, wink. And then she said, "Well, having heard a satisfactory answer, I will now vote for this bill." Because, you see, she's a freshman member of the House. And she had been pulled aside beforehand and said, "Honey, that's real nice that you made yourself a little principled stand last week, but your principled days are over. You're going to vote for the bill now, honey. Because if you don't, I don't care how many times you get reelected, you're going to stay on the color of toilet paper in the Capitol, in the Capitol Restrooms Committee for the rest of your tenure." Are we clear on that? And she, recognizing reality, said, "Yes, sir." Wink. So Winken's getting under my skin. Sure enough is. Email just rolled in, and yeah, the alternate number does work. If you want to get involved with the program, it's just one line at a time, but it's sort of our emergency backup, and it is on your nickel. 304-574-7810, 304-574-7810. We only use this in emergency backup cases. This is not for usual show purposes. But if you want to get in touch with the program, feel free to do so. 304-574-7810. I don't know what the hell's wrong with the phones. Amber writes in and says, "Dear Bob, leave it to the phones to go down on the first day that I was going to try to call. I'm Amber, and Gene the News Ninja is one of my best friends. I can finally listen to you because I'm in a more free space now. Thoughts about the debate? Did the governor have a cue card telling her to mention the word energy 750 times? And don't forget Maverick. As a person with a physical disability, Amber says, I was also dismayed that she kept mentioning that she had a child with special needs. Is she trying to get my sympathy vote? And WTF, is she doing running for vice president when she has a child who really needs a mother? Although I shudder to think about her parenting skills. But now I have a question," Amber says. "I was a little disappointed with both sides on the issue of gay rights, although of course we are much better than them. But why does everyone get so hung up on the traditional definition of marriage? If myself and my brothers and sisters want to get married and deal with all the crap that everybody else has to deal with, why can't we? Here's a stupid question. Does the Constitution actually define marriage as between one man and one woman? No. I tried to look it up quickly but couldn't find it. That's only because it's not there. Could you clear this up for me? And even if it is, why would it be wrong to update the Constitution for the times? It's not in there. Marriages are state law issues. They are not religious issues at all. That's part of why the right-wing religion industry, these freakish fundamentalists have been so successful. Because when they we got to define traditional marriage as a marriage between one man and one woman, what they mean is their tradition of marriage. Because, you know, I mean, not picking on anybody, but the Mormon tradition of marriage says it's a union between one man and however many women that he can get to go in on the scam. Right? What is it in Islam? Up to four? Lord God, Billy Bob, how many wives did Jacob, later named Israel? How many wives? Let's see, there was Leah and Rachel and Bilhah and... couple more, I think. So the question is, whose tradition? And then, you know, that's code. It's code for you and it's code for the fundies. Whenever some fundy says traditional marriage, what he means is, I want marriage to be defined within the terms of my religion, and I want to use the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States as a damn cudgel over the rest of your heads. One man, one woman. They're fools, fools, fools. Lord God, until the 14th or 15th, 16th century, the church would not even allow weddings to be be celebrated inside consecrated, hallowed the structures, churches, ground, whatever, because it was entirely too secular. It was too carnal. It was too dirty. If you were a bigwig and you had yourself a wedding, you got married in the palace or the castle or the whatever it was you lived in. If you were a serf, if you were a peasant, if you were working class, you didn't really much get married at all. You just looked at her and she looked at you and you said, you know, I reckon we're married. And that, yep, sure enough, and away you went. What's that thing about jumping over swords from years past? Leap rogue and jump whore, married be forevermore? Yeah, there's that traditional marriage. So thank you, Amber. I do appreciate it. So I hope I answered the question with that little rant. I didn't mean to go off like that. People get hung up on the traditional definition of marriage because the traditional definition of marriage is centrally located within their hang-ups about religion. They keep making it's not. And for that matter, you know, those marriages that were too carnal and too transactional to take place within the church was probably right because marriages back then were, you know, I will give you 60 acres in exchange for your daughter. And by the way, you will send over 12 oxen, 20 head of sheepen, and a cask of mead that we may procreate and create a son on our wedding night. We will be needing enough mead to get us through 30 days. Mead being honey wine, and yeah, that through a month. Hence the honeymoon. Oh, it was a very, very carnal affair. But we can't have that, we can't be talking about that down to the American Family Association, because this is, more than anything, it really is about property rights. And frankly, it is a threat to the religion industry in this country. What? You don't think church weddings don't bring a pretty penny into the church coffers? Funerals and weddings, and christenings if you go down that road too. Funerals and weddings, there's always a little palm greasing going on. Yeah, and that S has a line through it, just like a dollar sign, sunshine. You damn right it does. Weddings and funerals always have a little palm greasing, a little sweetening in it for the gospel sharp who attends to the holy business. Letting people get married to people that they actually love and of their own choice and where they choose and participating only in a civil sense, well, that's going to bite into the bottom line of all these 501c3 tax-exempt organizations. There's always money. Look, there's always a money angle. You know that. So, Amber, thank you very much. And love and light to you as well. Thank you very much for your note. Now, switching over to another email, this one coming from Mark Levine, clearing stuff up for me. Because I'd noted the fact that Repiglicans who opposed the bill were willing to were allowed to speak, whereas Democrats who opposed the bill were not. Mark says, no, you were watching not Dems and Repubs, but proponents and opponents of the bill. The proponents led by Barney put Dem and Republican proponents in place to speak. The opponents led by what? No, Mark, it didn't work like that. Everybody who stood up on Barney Frank's side was a Democrat, and they were allowed only to speak for purposes of a colloquy with the chairman. On the other hand, everybody who spoke on the Republican side at the sufferance of Spencer Baucus, those people were all Republicans, but they were both for and against the bill. How weird it is to see, after all the heavy-handed, ham-fisted shenanigans that the right-wing Repiglican Congress pulled from 1994 to 2006, how interesting to see them suddenly interested in fairness. And how sad to see Democrats create an information crackdown so that opponents like Dennis Kucinich. You know what Dennis Kucinich, I saw it happen. You know what Barney Frank recognized Dennis Kucinich for? He recognized Dennis Kucinich long enough for Dennis Kucinich to walk to the microphone and ask, pretty please, could he insert his remarks in the record since he was not to, because he wasn't going to be allowed to speak. Man, that's some freedom! Woo-wee! Much more of that freedom, and I don't think, well, mercy sakes. Golly, Ned, this could be a tough night. So I tell you what, it's about 16 minutes before the hour. If you want to get in on the conversation, feel free to do so. The number is 304-574-7810. 304-574-7810. You know, I told you that Dennis Kucinich mentioned Addie Polk, 90 years old, conned into taking a mortgage out on a home she already owned. They found her lying on a bed.
She survived. She's going to survive. She shot herself twice and missed. Bless her heart, she was determined. Twice with a long-barreled handgun.
90-year-old woman wielding a long-barreled handgun has got to take some determination. No, she's going to survive.
And miracle of miracle, what's up on the CNN website now, Sunshine?
Well, they've announced, yes, Lord, they've announced that the mortgage has been forgiven.
Just like a sin. Because Addie Polk, like all of us, after all, is a sinner.
They've forgiven her mortgage, and she's going to get to spend what few years that have been dramatically reduced by gunshot wounds. She's going to get to spend, hopefully, her remaining years in her home. If they don't cart her out for being incompetent by virtue of having tried to kill herself because they were trying to steal the home that she's been in for 90 years because it's a 110-year-old house. And folks like that, I'm speculating here. I'm speculating. But the house was 110 years old. She was 90. What does that mean? You know what America used to be like. You know the America we used to have. That's a 90-year-old lady. That's a woman who was pushing adulthood during the last Great Depression. Maybe she saw it coming. Maybe she didn't want to be dragged out of her home by sheriff's deputies. But her sins have been forgiven. Oh, glory, because never mind the whole, you know, the right wings and the pig lickings and the fundamentalists and the religion industry. They want to post the Ten Commandments. You know what? I say post them all over. And you know what? Let's add something to that. I want the damn fundamentalists to have them tattooed on their foreheads. So they'll finally read them when they look at each other. They can hang them all over the United States for all I care, but I want them renumbered. I want them renumbered 1 through 11. And I want Commandment 1 to be, I am debt. I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not default on thy debt. I'm pissed off. I really am. I'm disgusted. Called my congressman again. Huh, damn, that sure done me some good. I got his press release today. Let me see if I can find it. Tell you what my congressman was saying about the Wall Street bailout. It's in here somewhere. Oh, there it is. Ray Hall statement on passage of Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008.
U.S. Representative Nick Joe Ray Hall, the second DWV, issued the following statement today after voting in favor of the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act.
The EESA. It's the EESA, the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act 2008. The EESA 2008. God, it sounds like something they sell late night on cable channels, doesn't it? Act now and order your EESA 2008, and we'll send you a Ginsu knife. What a con. 263 to 171 was the final vote tally.
Congressman Ray Hall said West Virginia's banks have played by the rules, but if the status quo continues, West Virginians could suffer from the financial crisis. This bill will build a much-needed firewall between West Virginia taxpayers and Wall Street greed. Well, horse feathers.
Let's review that in slow motion, sports fans. West Virginia's banks have played by the rules. The banks have. What about us, Nick? What about the folks that are out there, eating beans instead of meat? So we can make mortgage payments every month, Nick. Have we played by the rules, or did you show your true colors by noting that it was the damn banks you were concerned with in West Virginia? This bill will keep credit lines available so that small businesses can meet their payrolls and students can take out college loans. Really, who's doing the college loans now? I remember the college student loan program. I was a beneficiary of it once upon a time. And they had itsy, bitsy, teensy, weensy, little tiny interest rates. Yeah, little tiny ones. They were the pain in the ass, but some of them were paybackable. Who's doing the student loans now? Just asking. Oh, that's right. They've been commercialized. And they're going at humongous interest rates now. Rates that credit, in some cases, rates that credit card companies would be embarrassed to charge. And the government's paying banks to do that. Just like we're paying the banks to loan us the money to pay the banks. Oh God, this just feels so good. I am stone cold sober and I feel like I've been on a 3-day drunk. That's how nuts and upside down and queasy and just sort of the floor rolling bed spinning. This bill will keep credit lines available so that small businesses can meet their payrolls and students can take out college loans and have a little puppy and have a calming effect, just like a goldfish, on our financial markets to ensure that seniors' nest eggs and retirement funds are safe and secure. Because otherwise, if we hadn't knuckled under to the boys on Wall Street, they were going to take Granny out and do to her what Addie Pope did to herself, or worse. It also contains tax incentives. Wait. My environmental friends who are so used to the focus of this program. My environmental friends, wait. Sit down, strap in, grab something. Don't be around any sharp objects here. Just, it's gonna take everything you've got. What I'm about to read. The other reason he voted for it? Why, it had some sweetening in it. Oh, there was a little sweetening for everybody in this thing. Went from three pages when Paulson brought the little thing down to the Congress. When he brought it down there and said, you know, pass it now or the economy gets it, it went from 3 pages to over 400. Mm-hmm, sure did. And some of those pages have some, I imagine Nick and Jay and Bob Byrd were just licking the paper. It was so sweet. It also contains tax incentives that promote coal gasification and carbon sequestration projects, which are essential to the future use of coal. I got to share something with you about that. Roy McElmoyle's been on the program. He's a smart guy. He's a real smart guy, Rory is. He sent me a little something today. And it's one of those things you got to have a look at. You got to have a listen to. Because Nick's all excited because it's got some money in it, and George Dunn signed it with his bill signing crayon. You know, he didn't get out that black veto crayon. He signed it with his bright red bill approving crayon today. I hear he used his toes. Well, anyway, Nick goes on to say, while I am pleased a resolution was found, which it wasn't, the toughest part of the work lies ahead, holding the responsible party's feet to the fire. Yeah, when are you going to do that? And truly reining in the abuses of Wall Street. Oh, God. Oh, tell me another one, Nick. Tell me the one about the duck. Jesus, reigning in the abuses of Wall Street. But anyway, you hear that carbon sequestration foolishness? Because please understand that carbon sequestration is foolishness. I mean, dumber than homemade stupid, okay? So Rory sent this along to me earlier today, Rory McElmoyle. It's Rory McElmoyle, VSG. And that stands for very smart guy. Rory McElmoyle, very smart guy. Well, somebody had written to Rory talking about how it's actually feasible to have some carbon neutral coal. How you can burn coal and still not have any impact on the environment. Yeah, no kidding. Well, bless his heart, if Rory has a short suit, it probably lies in the fact that he's so darn smart that if you ask Rory what time it is, he's prone to tell you how to build a watch. Because he knows how. And he wants you to know, too. I tease. I love Rory to death. But anyway, he answers this foolishness about carbon neutral coal, and then he gets to the business end of things. And I'm just going to read this to you. I know, I've been reading to you too much, but I'm sorry. That just kind of has to happen sometimes. Because I can't make this work in my head because I don't have the brains. But talking about annual sequestration of coal, he notes, let's look at West Virginia. Just West Virginia, okay? This doesn't count New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, California, Oregon, Illinois. None of that. Just little old itsy-bitsy West Virginia. 160 million tons of coal are produced in West Virginia every year. Now, of that sum, one-fifth, or about 32 million tons, is burned at West Virginia power plants. 20%. 32 million tons of coal burned times 2.8 tons of CO2 equals, because that's what it yields per million tons, a million tons of coal burned yields 32 million tons of coal burned times 2.8 tons of CO2 equals 89.6 million tons. Million tons, mind you. We're getting up into the fun bailout bill numbers at this point. Equals 89.6 million tons of carbon dioxide. So if you're going to reach true carbon neutrality, you have to begin with finding a place to put 89.6 million tons of CO2 every year, and that's just West Virginia. Are we together so far? Are we still okay? Let me know if your eyes start rolling back in your head. You know, 304-574-7810 if you want to join in. Or email's fine too, bob@headonradio.com. So we gotta find 89.6 million tons of CO2 storage every year in the state of West Virginia alone. Again, nowhere else, just West Virginia. So how much space would that take? Oh, I know some people out there that are already running the numbers. Well, let's not think, in this case, we don't think outside the box, we think inside it. How much space would you need to find annually to sequester that much CO2 in West Virginia? And here's what Rory wrote. Basic density conversion factors for CO2 show that one ton of CO2 requires 17,246 cubic feet of space. That's feet cubed, feet with a little three. 17,246 cubic feet of space for every ton of CO2 produced. So taking that into account, 89.6 million tons of CO2 would require 1.54 trillion cubic feet of space. There's some big numbers, Bob. What's that mean? Well, that means you're talking about a storage reservoir spanning 9.9 million acres long, and 1 meter, 3.3 feet high. And as Rory notes, you have to find this amount of space every year in order to sequester all the potential CO2 emissions from burning coal in West Virginia. And if your goal is indeed to make coal carbon neutral. Now, let's put some perspective on that. At this point in time, we need, just for 1 year of carbon sequestration in West Virginia alone, we need a storage reservoir that spans 9.9 million acres long and 1 meter high. Now, let's put that into perspective. The surface area of West Virginia is 15.5 million acres. So there would then, Rory says, have to be sufficient reservoirs lying underneath the surface of West Virginia to sequester 89.2 million tons of CO2 every year, all right, In other words, over a 20-year period, extrapolating it outward, you'd have to find a 20-meter-high reservoir spanning 60% of the state's land area in order to make coal burned in West Virginia carbon neutral. But that's just the stuff that's burned in the coal-fired power plants. You still have to eliminate all of the other sources of CO2 related to the coal life cycle. And then, if the West Virginia subsurface does indeed turn out to be one great big hollow cavity capable of holding that much CO2, how will you guarantee the safety of that storage? Because if that stuff comes up, it is not lighter than air, and lots of people will suffocate and die. And then Rory tells on himself. He says, how are you going to do that safely and in a cost-efficient manner? And by the way, he says, I've actually forgotten to account for the extra ton of coal burned to power the sequestration process. But let's imagine that things are going to be going in a good direction in West Virginia, and that on balance that extra ton is balanced out by a ton of coal's worth of electricity being covered by new renewable energy generation. In either case, then, you got to answer the following questions. In order to get carbon neutral, what are you going to do about the emissions from coal trucks and bulldozers? Because they're both intimately associated with getting the coal to market. You got to deal with the outgassing of coal bed methane that occurs in preparation for blowing up mountains. You also have to deal with the rapid decomposition of the trees that are clear cut, coupled with the lack of forest regrowth and thus new carbon sequestration on the hundreds of thousands of acres of newly strip-mined land in West Virginia. And no, they don't use all the trees commercially. Many are dumped into valley fills and or burned on site, but we've talked about that before. And you also have to deal with the release of carbon dioxide from the soils that are scraped off and placed in valley fills. You got to do all of that, Senator Obama, John McCain, Sarah Dactyl, Joe Biden, because you've all talked about clean coal. You got to do all of that before coal even begins to be remotely referenceable as clean. Are we clear? Are we square? Marty writes in, hey, Bob, as you might know, there is a Proposition 8 here in California. Oh, yeah, Marty, I know. The American Family Association took $500,000 to fund the fund the attempt to keep folks from getting married in California. And they're in Mississippi, when that $500,000 could have actually done a significant amount of good in, say, Jackson or Hancock County, but never mind, because they don't count. Marty says, a proposed amendment to the Constitution of California to enshrine bigotry and control over the life and lifestyles of other people who are not me, i.e., and not me personally, of course. I've often said that if this proposition passes and bigotry becomes the law of California, I propose to circulate a petition of my own to amend the Constitution of the great state of California to re-enshrine the anti-miscegenation laws that were in place before they were struck down by the courts against the popular view of the electorate. I believe my sisters support Proposition 8, and both are intermarried. Wow. I keep telling people to be very careful about voting away someone else's rights. Eventually, it might come to a right they do care about. Then they might remember Pastor Niemöller, but then it'll be too late to speak up for them. It's damp here in Northern California, Marty says. Glory. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, Susan, you're right. Yeah, the people in that couplet, Leap Rogue and Jump Whore and Mary D. Forevermore, yeah, they were leaping a broom. Old medieval rhyme, as I understand it. So, God, we're not without stuff to talk about tonight, are we, after all? Got off to a little bit of a rocky start, but I think we'll be okay. Cossack says, Bob, you don't understand. Our Congress critters were told to sign the paper. or else this would happen. Picture of a gun up to the head of a puppy. Yeah, no kidding. Right. Give us the money or the economy or Granny gets it. And Granny got it anyway. But she's been forgiven, sinner. So we can all feel ever so much better. By the way, journalism moment. And they caught it and they changed it right quick because, you know, they knew that there are smart asses like me out there who'll catch things like this. Woman, let's see, 90-year-old woman facing foreclosure shoots self in house. Couldn't get out of Miss Hugert's ninth grade journalism class. Mercy sakes. Man, it hurts when you get shot in the house. That's a lot worse than getting shot in the foot or shot in the spleen. When you get shot in the house, it's serious business. But Lord, it goes on and on and on this evening because it's not all bailout stuff, and I don't want you to think that it is. Oh, Jesus. Guys, all right. Wally, Dookie, Clyde, take the winky thing off. I just, you know, I used tabbed browsing, and I just went one tab back, and there she was. But I do that. How many American men are sitting there going, dang, she's hot? By the way, just in case you were curious, it is now, it's a certainty. We just gave away another, let's see, what are we up to now? Let's see, there was $600 billion budget extension a couple of days before that. There was the credit infusion of nearly $700 billion. So we're like $1.3 trillion. And now we did $700 billion. Yeah, we're at $2 trillion. Headline, recession now certain, economists say. Oh, God, well, I'm glad you acted with such certitude and promptness, Congress. Dadgum, I tell you what. Yeah, you know, can't beat your dedication now, can we? Even before the latest squeeze in the credit markets, the U.S. economy had slipped into what could be a relatively lengthy recession, economists say. What kind of language gives me the thing? It could be a relatively lengthy recession, you understand. Oh, dear God, please, pass the lavage qui rit, fromage, s'il vous plaît. Avec des pains et des vins. I need a snack. There's a recession. It could be rather lengthy. The latest data, this from MarketWatch. The latest data covering activity in August and September make it all but certain that the academic economists will eventually declare that the economy is in a recession. Duh. I mean, it's the end of a Bush presidency. Hello? Bueller? That's what happens at the end of Bush presidencies. And Republican presidencies. Got so bad under Richard Nixon he had to introduce price controls. Oh, I'm sorry, that was inflation. But we want to have us a beer with George Bush. We want to have beer with him. And what is it that they've decided now? What's the benchmark question about Sarah Palin? Because I don't think we want to have a beer with her. Oh, never mind. No, it's too early in the evening and the kids aren't in bed. So no matter. And, you know, again, it's not like I've got some little tattered robe and a magic eight ball answer hazy ask again later, but any fool could see it. The economy's going down the toilet. And it's not going gently. There's going to be pain. And there was no attempt whatsoever to forestall any of that pain for any of us today. Wall Street got it all. Because they wanted it all. And if they didn't get it all, they were going to take the economy out in the back and shoot it in the head. What choice did they have, huh? I mean, they couldn't not go home on vacation. Remember, they were lonely. They had to stay. If they'd had to stay, oh my God, you know, oh, the atonal music, riots in the congressional riots in the streets. We want to go home. But they could have. They could have stayed in session. They could have sat there and taken a couple of weeks and had some economists in. But see, you don't want to have the economists in because they're going to come in and say the same thing it said there in the article at MarketWatch. They're going to tell you that poop stinks and that the economy is caca right now. So, you know, let's not do that. All right, let's take a phone, see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Cindy out in the Pacific Northwest.
Hey, Cindy, how are you? Good to hear from you.
I'm okay. Hey, didn't you know we're all on our own now? That's what we learned with Katrina, isn't it?
And Ike. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I saw some remark about that in the last 24 hours or so, that we're rescuing Wall Street just like we rescued people from Katrina. Wait. We didn't rescue anybody from Katrina, but never mind. Wall Street gets rescued.
Well, Wall Street isn't getting rescued either. The Wall Street executives are getting rescued, and it's all going to float easy until after the election, or it's most probably going to be a selection. And then if we win it, it'll crumble. Either way, it's going to crumble. It's not going to be good. The only chance we have is to vote for Barack and try to beat our Democrats into building a new economy the way was done during the last Depression. Only let's not use a war to find jobs. You know, I think we got enough.
Yeah, but, well, it's worth remembering, Cindy, that the Great Depression had pretty much leveled out and more or less come to a close and been solved by 1938. It's a big myth that World War II ended the Depression. No, we were well on the road to recovery before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor.
That's true, because we had all of those factories that could be converted to war, right?
Well, yeah, they just had to get back up and running and have people working in them.
But yeah, and they weren't sitting there from the 1800s. Those were newer factories in the day.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah, so... Hey, did you get my email where I told you my husband went over to Walmart today and there were troops inside the store?
Well, I saw that, and I didn't really know what to make of it.
Yeah.
Was it a publicity stunt, or I mean, what were full gear?
He was afraid to ask because the new Homeland Security rules. We don't know the rules anymore. There's so many new laws, we don't know what they are anymore. And we're not trying to foment revolution or anything like that. We're just people wanting to go to the store. But when you have U.S. Army in full gear with weapons standing inside the store, and there's like eight of them in there, not together, they're posted in different areas of the store, like they're guarding the interior of the store. The only thing I could think of is they thought that people were going to go berserk and loot the store or something. You know?
Well, I mean, you say they were. I'm looking at your email now, Cindy. You say they were in full gear. What did they look like? I mean, what were they wearing? What color? I mean.
Stephen says they were in fatigues.
They were not in no weapons.
Okay, but they were in like the field gray fatigues and with the patches.
Desert fatigues.
Oh, wow.
They were guarding the store.
Well, you know, it just seemed awful funny. You know, I've seen them come in and shot before, but these people were all standing around doing nothing.
Are we talking about folks from Fort Lewis?
I'm not certain where they're from.
That's the closest place.
Well, of course, could be the National Guard here, too.
Were they National Guard or were they regular
Army? They're Army grub. I don't know.
You can't tell the Guard from the Army anymore.
I don't think you're supposed to be able to. Good to hear from you, Steve, by the way.
Good to hear from you, Steve, by the way.
Good talking to you.
He'll be back in a minute. He's chasing some dogs out the door.
Well, what was the congressman's name? I got several emails about it earlier today. Oh, fiddledy-dee. I gotta find it.
Well, that one congressman that said that they were threatened with martial law?
Yeah, they were told point blank, you don't pass this, there's going to be martial law.
Yeah, I sat, Alex Jones has the story over there.
Granted, so I take Alex with a big old grain of salt, but...
Hey, but you got to admit, I heard somebody talking about it recently, and, you know, there's different people in the movement. There's Ed Schultz over there, there's Alex Jones, there's you, there's Mike, there's several talented women, and everybody comes from a different background. They kind of speak to a different audience. And this guy has a really different audience. He is in Texas, and that is a very weird state compared to the rest of the union, honestly. And Alex is he's a independent. He used to be more or less, what do they call it, libertarian. But he's moved away from even that, and he's independent. And, you know, he's young. He doesn't have the background that we have. He's the age of my son, and he has a family. He has little kids, and he's at that age in life where he's trying to protect his family from what he sees as a terrible turn of events, and he's the protector type. And, you know, he gets a little overexcited sometimes, but, you know, he does his homework, and the only thing he doesn't do is open his umbrella of information a little bit. And you, Bob, are more highly educated than him and more sophisticated. And let's face it, Texas doesn't grow sophisticated people, okay?
Now, you've obviously never spent much time listening to Rick Goodner. He's plenty sophisticated.
Well, I lived in Texas for a year.
What about Molly Ivins?
Well, Molly Ivins is an angel. I love her.
And, you know, Jim Hightower. Now, there's plenty of sophistication all over the South. But the right wing has been very effective, Cindy, in making it appear that everybody's just running around listening to Toby Keith records.
Yeah, well, I think whatever went on in Texas for the last 20 years is going to come to a screaming end after all of Texas learns what happened in Galveston. You know, they're not going to like the stories that come home after the electric grid goes up and people start talking.
You know, I saw a series of photographs today that was sent to me of... And there was some irony in it. We know what was not reported, and I know that sounds a little bit weird, but we kind of do. We know what was not reported. We know what a lockdown there was on reporting out of Galveston bodies. You know, there's still, I think the trying to fudge the numbers estimate is there's still people 300 missing, and rescuers and recovery workers are saying that it's been made all the more difficult because they may be under cattle, they may have been eaten by alligators, you know, horrifying stuff.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, it was 400 that are missing, that were accounted for when the storm was coming in and are now missing, but did not evacuate. So there's 400 on that list. And I don't know how many they've recovered since that original 400 list came out, but I heard one woman yesterday, she's a friend of somebody that's working the rescue, and she was on the phone to them, and she stayed home with her cat or her dog or something and wouldn't leave. And she was on the cell phone calling her friend, and she said, "I think I made a mistake. I should have left." And the phone cut off, and nobody heard from her, and they went in, and they looked for her. They found her body with the clothes ripped off from running across debris and whatnot. They found her body on a heap of rubble.
Oh, merciful God. Well, what I was going to say is that there's a little bit of irony, because I got an email earlier today showing the damage that was done, Cindy, to Citibank JP Morgan Chase's great big tower in Houston. And I have no reason to disbelieve it, unless it comes up on Snopes as not being real. But it's astonishing levels of damage. Windows blown out, complete offices wrecked. But what I found ironic was the fact that, you know, we can see how the poor little bank fared, but still no pictures of working folks. No pictures of the damage to working neighborhoods or anything like that.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, in a small bit of fairness, I just worked a scene like that out here in our state when I went up there last December. We had that hurricane off of our coast. And we don't call them hurricanes. We call them storms. We don't give them names. We give them dates. So it was called the Storm of December 2 or the December 2 storm.
I remember you sending some pictures of that.
Yeah, we had 120-mile-an-hour winds in that storm. Sustained winds at 112, gusting to 120, and that thing hung in here for 4 days and ground on us like a meat grinder. And we have trees, and, you know, we have a lot of trees here and a lot of, you know, we don't prepare for something like that. Like down in the south, they might batten down the hatches and get ready and see it coming. We better be ready or we die up here, because the size of these trees flying around here are just unbelievable. And they do uproot. The trees up here are very shallow-rooted, and they can grow.
Well, it's mountain country, and there's thin topsoil.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's why we all design our landscaping to prevent that kind of thing going on our home and everything, you know. Anyway, when I went out to the area where the disaster struck worse, it was Lewis County, and it was... In fact, it was impossible for 12 days to get in there. And finally, my husband got through to the sheriff's, and the sheriff's department was underwater, 11 feet of water in the sheriff's department. They were out of business. And finally, we found out where the sheriffs were meeting up with the National Guard, and he went to that. It was a temporary trailer or something they set up, and he went there and volunteered, told him who he was, told him what families we were looking for. And the sheriff and the National Guard, you know, Steve knew how to outfit because he's worked this kind of thing before, so he had his gear on, you know, like heavy boots and protective clothing. And under the circumstances, you have to obey the sheriff. Whatever he tells you, you go here and do that.
No, sure.
Yeah, so he went in with those guys, and they went, it took them from about, once they started out at the station, which was probably 40 to 50 miles away, it took them all day to get to the house because there were downed trees and no roads, and the ground was so saturated with water it heaved up and all the roads buckled and came off the ground and rolled over. Kind of like when you take a blanket or a tablecloth and you fluff it, that's what happened to the roads. So it was like off-road. And they cut a path. It took them... it took them 2 weeks to be able to cut some military roads back into that area and rescue people, and Steve was able to go through that area with the sheriffs and the National Guard to the house and rescued this family and their pets and brought them down to my house where they had to stay for a month. So we had all kinds of people and animals here for an entire month running a rescue. it was absolutely a zoo.
Oh, I can imagine. It sounds like you just got an amen there from the peanut gallery.
Yeah, it was very difficult getting in and out. So these people in Galveston, between the city and Galveston, all the roads are torn up and there's debris everywhere. And you drive a couple miles and you have to get out and move a tree, and then you can get past that tree and you go maybe. Little while further and there's another tree, and then there's another tree and maybe a rolled vehicle, so there's all this stuff that's got to be moved. And then you might find that you're at a patch where there's no road and there's maybe a river there. Up here they had to bring in the National Guard, and they dropped military bridges, the kind that a mechanized division takes.
Yeah, pontoon bridges.
Yeah, and they drop them across the river, this big metal thing. And we still are using those today. I just went up there this last week. And there's still no roads. You still have to drive the military bridges. And they're starting to pave the few roads that are repaired, but it's still at least another year before the bridge to the town is in. So the nice thing about it is that there's no logging going on because the log trucks are too big to get over the bridges. So it's nice and quiet out there.
Unintended positive consequences, I suppose, Cindy.
Yeah, I think the people in Galveston are suffering the same thing. You just can't get to and from. And from what I understand there, now see here you can run 50 miles and come back on one tank of gas. But Galveston, I think it takes a tank of gas to get out there, and you need a tank to get back. And there's nowhere to get gas on the other end.
Exactly. So right. But you know, you're just okay. So you know, let's draw a little picture. You're describing this, and it's happening in the in some of the furthest northwest corners of the continental United States.
Yeah.
We're crippled in Galveston. We know from folks like Kate and the other people that we've talked to from the Mississippi Gulf Coast what's going on there. The upper Midwest was, and I don't care what Flush Flimball says about, you know, well, they weathered my friends weathered the hurricanes because they're white. I don't care about that. There's still a lot of devastation. I'm sure there are still people pumping out basements and cleaning up stuff in the upper Midwest. And the list goes on and on and on.
It does.
And there's a reason we can't cope with this stuff. And it has nothing to do with resources. It has everything to do with leadership. And we ain't got none.
We are without leadership. Without. Everybody that's in office except for those few heroes, and we all know the names, we could draw up a list, the few heroes that are trying to fight for us and who are horribly outnumbered, people like Kucinich and Sanders from Vermont. And, you know, there's some really great people. Bless his heart, Ted Kennedy, you know.
Right.
People that are outnumbered and you know, they're as outnumbered as we are, Bob. The rest of them, I don't know what kind of game they're playing on us, but all I got to say to them is that they're going to go down with us if this whole country goes down. You know.
Cindy, I don't mean to seem too cynical or too negative. I don't know that to be true. Because if history is any indicator or prognosticator, yeah, during the Great Depression things got tough for our betters. But they didn't stop eating. They didn't starve. They didn't stand in bread lines or go to soup kitchens.
Well, I know for a fact that my ex-husband's family, his grandfather was a bank president of a big Chicago bank, and the bank crashed on Wall Street. This man lost his mansion full of European antiques. The man was wealthy. I mean, upper crust like the Roosevelts. And this man crashed right down to the bottom, and the shock of it made him sick and his wife sick, so they both spent prolonged, at least a year on their backs before they died, which cost a lot of medical bills. And when the whole thing flushed out, the two surviving children's inheritance was no better than a mechanic could give their kids. There was no money left.
Well, those were the people who were riding the market, betting on the margin. I'm not talking about them.
Most likely.
I'm talking about the people, the people who consider themselves our betters. And there's no stories of trauma and hardship in the Bush Walker clan. All right, the Pierces were. You know, that hateful old beast Barbara Bush was a Pierce, and there's no stories of them going through hard times.
Well, you do know that a big chunk of this bailout is going personally to them.
Oh, I don't doubt that they've got their filthy mitts in it. They're, you know, cherchez l'argent, find the money. Sure.
Well, Lehman went belly up, and that was their bank. That was their bank. And because it went belly up, And when it went belly up, a little bit of identity was splashed out onto the internet. So now they don't want Lehman anymore because it's identified just like Carlyle. They want to stay sneaky and underground. So they want this wad of money so that they can reestablish a new bank with a new name that nobody will know it's them. Because that's the kind of snakes they are.
Well, weren't they up to their eyeballs in the what was it called? BCC Bank of Credit and BCCI Bank of Credit and Commerce International, the same ones that John Kerry almost busted for doing business with, you know, the bad guys, the terrorists, the money launderers, the drug dealers, etc.
Yeah, I think today's bailout has only postponed the inevitable, and that we're still going to slide into a depression, and we're still making.
Well, the economists, when the economists say, a rather lengthy recession. That's Chablis and Brie talk for it's going to tank and, yeah.
You know what I noticed? As I listened to people talk across the country before the vote was taken, I noticed that the element of panic and the wish that it would go through was coming from places like New York City and Washington, D.C., and, you know, California's got their own stock thing. California's belly up. They're asking for a $7 billion loan or $70 billion. Schwarzenegger's asking for because his state's broke.
Well, Schwarzenegger sent a message that was read into the record by Representative Zoe Lofgren, who is a Democrat. And she told the assembled House today, I was watching the debate, she said the governor and the treasurer of the state of California, the eighth largest economy in the world, have asked me to convey to the House that if they don't get this bailout bill, well, Governor Schwarzenegger says that we won't be able to pay the firefighters and the teachers and the cops. Now,
oh, okay.
Now that's just, but you realize what that is, Cindy. That's just, I mean, that's the knife out of the sheath. That's designed to scare all the white peoples into thinking, oh, Lori, oh, dear God, the Mexicans will be running among us and they'll be on our women like ducks on June bugs. Oh, we got to have the bailout. You know how it works. It's scare tactics. It's, and racist scare tactics at that. You know, why am I surprised?
Yeah, I got you. Okay. I didn't know about that, but it's so obvious, it's not even funny, you know. I studied the, did you see that, that program that's free on the internet? I sent you a link about Russia, when Russia collapsed. The collapse of a nation.
Yes.
It's called The Collapse of a Nation.
Yes, I have seen it.
Yes, and I watched that. It's a heartbreaking film, but I watched it very carefully for who in the collapse survived and who didn't survive and how did they survive and, you know, what kind of goings-on happened. And I kind of took notes from that film, and I highly suggest it. It's on either Google Video or YouTube for free on the net. And it talked about how people like you and me who live out in the countryside who've got a little patch of land and can grow a little bit of food in the garden, did quite well, especially if you can do a little livestock, you know, sell a few eggs and chickens or something, that you do quite well when things are like this. But if you live in a city, if you don't tear out your landscaping and put in something that'll grow food, they called it Victory Garden the last time.
Right.
Not going to do well. In other words, the day of...
Oh, and if we learn about things like permaculture... And, you know, raised bed gardening and things like that, we can grow tons of stuff. And it doesn't have to be done with a whole bunch of chemical fertilizers or pesticides or things like that. It can be done.
Some part of me actually wants this to collapse and go away so we can build a better country.
Well, see, but I've acknowledged that in myself, Cindy, but I can't let that, and I call it, you know, a lizard brain response on my part. Because I know, as someone who is in the working class and probably fairly low on that working class ladder, I know that they will take it out of my ass, all right? Because, as I said, the silk suit guys, you know, they might have to go to a tropical weight worsted wool instead of silk. They might have to go to caviar 4 times a week instead of 7. But they're going to be all right because we're down here to be plundered. And there are some, you know, some of us still have homes. Some of us still have, you know, we have our labor. And we can be put to work doing whatever it takes. I mean, my God, these jackasses in the Congress today just hung a bill on my kids and grandkids and great-grandkids as yet unborn and undreamt of. To the tune of thousands and thousands of dollars for every American and Americans that don't yet exist. They will get it out of our hides. They're getting it now, and they will. And the thing is, they were a little nervous this time through, but the next time through, if they're truly scared, they will bear the fangs and they will tear flesh to get theirs. and we are not allowed to reverse the process.
Yeah, well, how does the process get reversed?
I just said we're not allowed to reverse the process. You know, all that business, watching the debates, well, you know, it's a bad, and every, so many Democrats came out and said, ah, it's a bad bill, but I'm going to vote for the bill anyway. And it was mealy-mouthed, and it was putrid, and they're not going to reverse diddly, okay? They gave in to the ransom demands, and all that means is that there will be another ransom demand. They sent us the country's pinky in an envelope this time through. The next time, it'll be the whole arm. And there will be another ransom demand because we have just taught Wall Street. I mean, you remember ignorant old Ronnie Reagan out there? Granted, he was doing it at the same time that he was saying that we didn't, you know. But he'd say, we don't negotiate with terrorists. Remember that? I remember that. Of course,
yeah.
I said, he was negotiating with terrorists when he said it because he was a filthy old right-wing pig-licking liar. But that principle does hold true. And what we just did is we just negotiated with, we not only negotiated, but we just acceded to domestic terrorists, which is what Wall Street and these predatory lenders and these predatory bankers are. And now that they have seen that we will cave and that we will knuckle under, they will be back. Because George Bush is not out of there until January 20th, 2009, and with Congress not even in session, they can just about do whatever they want.
I think the reason why the troops are deployed is to keep us quiet.
Well, they're there just in case. And by the way, I just got an email in from our buddy Marty. And he noted that Alex Jones might have reported the story about Congressman Brad Sherman, but it wasn't his scoop. He said it, Sherman said it on the floor of the House. There's the YouTube video. I've got a link for it here. And also, it was long before Alex Jones got hold of it, it was reported in no less a for-profit media source than the Boston Globe. So he must have been fairly serious about it. And here's what the Boston Globe has to say, Cindy. He said, we don't have to panic. The panic mongers were to the point of telling people the market would drop 3,000 points and there would be martial law. The exaggerated fear mongering turned out not to be true. We can draft a good bill. There are much better approaches.
I listened to Alex's show today, and he got that congressman on the phone. And Alex tried every which way but loose to get the guy to repeat what he said, that Congress people were threatened on the floor of the Congress that if they didn't vote to pass this bill, that there would be martial law declared. And
well, he didn't really need to repeat it though, because it's there. It's there.
He tried to get him to say it again, and you know what the congressman said?
What?
The congressman told him that that was a private comment between House members on the floor, and that there was a rule about not telling what they talk about on the floor, you know, among each other.
Well, that could. I mean, let's just listen to it as it was said. Let's check this out real quick.
Okay.
City from Ohio. The only way they can pass this bill is by creating and sustaining a panic atmosphere. That atmosphere is not justified. Many of us were told in private conversations that if we voted against this bill on Monday, that the sky would fall, the market would drop 2,000 or 3,000 points the first day, another couple thousand the second day, and a few members were even told that there would be martial law in America if we voted no. That's what I call fear-mongering. Unjustified. Proven wrong. We've got a week, we've got 2 weeks to write a good bill. The only way to pass a bad bill, keep the panic pressure on. Now, what has the Senate done to this bill?
Okay, so there you go. He doesn't say it was said to him. He says it was said to somebody else, and that renders it hearsay. So, but I don't doubt that some people said that kind of stuff. There was tremendous fear-mongering pressure. And that's the purpose of it, is to get, you know, you say whatever it'll take to get somebody to accede to your demands. You know, it wasn't just that. Lord, some of the some of the other stuff was just sickening as well. Out in the Oregon delegation, okay. Senator Ron Wyden and Gordon Smith, they were pushing for, and they got, the suspension of a 39-cent excise tax on arrows made from natural wood. Like I said, Ron Wyden and Gordon Smith were behind this, it is a direct tax, it's a direct relief package for Rose City Archery in Myrtle Point, Oregon.
Isn't that ridiculous?
So, you know, there are some people that you scare, and there are some people that you bribe.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, it's tragic. It's sickening.
It really is.
Well, Cindy, I thank you very much for calling in, and I do appreciate, I really do appreciate hearing from you and everything that you brought to the table. But because we've only got one line here, I don't know if anybody else is trying to reach the program, so all I can do is...
clear the line then, and yeah. Thanks for visiting.
All right, thanks, Cindy. Take care and have a wonderful weekend.
You too, Bob. Bye-bye now.
Yeah, there is only one line here, so just in case any of you are trying to get in, you can get in now. That number... 304-574-7810, 304-574-7810, email, of course, bob@headonradio.com, but only one, there. It's like that thing from Highlander where the phone call's concerned, there can be only one, we can only get one call at a time, and at some point I'm probably going to have to suspend the program long enough to deal with this latest technical nightmare. Apparently, I have to shut down everything and reboot the... This isn't some little pissant router. This is a great, big, humongous box. And they always wind up saying, well, you know, why don't you reboot that thing? Well, you know, it's... Okay, that's what I'll do then. So if that's the case, and... all right, I just wanted to make sure nobody else was trying to reach. If that's the case, what I'll do then is... I'll just sort of quietly say, I'll be back in a minute. Okay, it'll be a few minutes. Don't run off. Don't give up. You know, open the solitaire program on your computer or something, or Free Cell or Backgammon, or go play Poppet for a few minutes or something, any of that. Don't run off. I'll do everything in my power to be back. If it's still not fixed, I'll tell you, and we'll just call it for Friday night. But I did want to let you know before, I wanted to make sure that you knew, and I wanted to make sure it would hit the archives, that you knew that we're going to try to be live for the Mountain Blessing on Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're around Sunday afternoon, I encourage you to tune in, listen to folks, because frankly, we need witnesses. Okay? I'm not trying to overplay this. But the last time we did this, a bunch of coal thugs came and tried to shout down a bunch of, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, and 70-something peaceniks. And if you're listening and something goes down, you can write down the time and everything that will take into account the latency of the stream and all of that stuff. But there's a reason that we're going out live. And I don't know, I'm not sure if we can make it work or not. I'll be talking with John some more about it. We can probably take some phone calls, too, if you want to do that. So that's 3 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, and I hope you will join us. So I'm not going to play any music or anything. We're taking a little break here because, darn it, I have to... reboot everything, and hopefully by the time I come back, the phones will actually be, you know, working. So cross your fingers, hope for the best, and I'll talk to you all in a few. God willing, the crick don't rise. Stand by. You know, this takes a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you. Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, and yes, indeed, I am most assuredly back. And hey, you want to hear something? You want to hear something really cool? Check this out. Hear that? Let's try this one. Oh, that is a sweet sound. That's the sweetest sound in the world, second to a ringing telephone to someone who does conversation radio, I can assure you. So it's about 24 minutes past the hour. I'm sorry for the interruption. These things happen. But hopefully, beginning of the week, things will get fixed. I think we've got a new unit coming in that will handle it. Because I think it's the unit. It's either that or Verizon. Because the guys at CityNet work their butts off, and they do a great job, and they always try to solve the problems. You know that we've been thrilled to pieces with our CityNet service. If you're in an area where CityNet is offering service, they got a real bargain on internet phone service, dedicated real live telephone, that kind of thing. You can click the banner at headonradionetwork.com and find out about it. And you know what? Customer service, second to none. You always get a real live human being, 24 hours, 7 days a week, and they will not quit until they've got everything straightened up and have made you happy. So, among other, well, I'll tell you what, let's test the phones. What do you say? There's a ring coming in right now. So, we'll give it a go and see what happens. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh my God. It is you. It is you, Bob.
No, it's me. It's me, Cossack. What's happening?
Not much. Just tearing my hair out. I'll be bald before the elections come by.
I'm beginning to feel that way myself. And you know, maybe that's what all this is about. They couldn't run the political risk of not doing something. And, you know, because the I get what? Am I to understand, Cossack, that the American people wouldn't understand it if Nancy Pelosi just said, listen, these people could screw up a one-car funeral. Let's just wait till we get a new Congress in. And no, they couldn't do that, so they had to pass this, and they're promising they'll fix it. Do you have any faith in that?
Well, no, because Pelosi and Schumer and Frank are all sold out to the same goddamn mafia from Wall Street. They have to bail out their buddies because that's where a lot of their money is. I mean, you know.
You know, and that's the thing. I was watching for two things today, Cossack. I'm glad you brought that up. As I watched the so-called debate today, my pink little ears were perked up for two things, to see if I heard one of two things. One of them was to see if anybody, because did you get to watch it?
No.
Okay, well, the way that Barney Frank structured his side of it was he would only allow people to get up for purposes of asking him a question. And, in the form of a colloquy. So I sat there watching, and what I wanted to see is whether anybody would stand up and ask him, what about the judicial provisions? And I may have walked out of the room a couple of times, but I didn't miss much. I mean, I just about caught it all. And I didn't see anybody raise that issue. Now, we went over that last night. I don't know if you were listening or not, but we went over that last night. Because it's the biggest and nastiest part of Section 8 that was put back in. You know, that was what caused so much of the uprising on the Democratic side the last time through, and they pulled it out. Well, now the Senate snuck it back in, and everybody was hunky-dory with it. So nobody asked Barney Frank about that, because I guess that's just too, you know, That's too geeky for the American people to actually have to consider. The other thing was nobody said this entire body or the majority thereof has a profound conflict of interest in this whole piece of legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Republican or Democrat.
Exactly. Well, you heard what happened in the closing hours before Lehman went belly up, right?
Which part?
Where the executives, the New York staff, cordoned off a $2.5 billion pool to be spread amongst themselves.
Sweet. Well, that's almost as good as the guy who left, what was it, who left WAMU. What was his name? Alan Fishman? Yeah, you know what he did, right?
Right. The, what was it, $17 million for 3 weeks?
$19 million for two and a half.
Yeah. Gee, Bob, why can't you get that job? And we'd have Horn running 24 hours, day and night, audio, video, satellite uplinks. I mean,
yeah, don't forget the T10 line.
How the hell do you get away with crap like this?
Honest to God, Cossack, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm too much a prol. Maybe I'm just too plebeian to understand this stuff. But what in the name of, I mean, okay, let's factor in and be fair. We understand that nice digs on Central Park West are pricey.
Yeah.
Okay. So you gotta pay, and New York is the financial center of the universe.
Right.
So you've got to pay adequate wages. You can't expect somebody to live in a rent-controlled, you know, whatever, and be the president of old WAMU. But.
Well, can't, but. I mean, the problem of it is, it's not just their digs in New York. It's their chalet in Steamboat Springs. It's their little cottage in the South France.
Yeah, don't forget the ski chateau in Stade and the one in Stowe.
Exactly. I mean, good grief.
The beach house on Ono Island ain't bad either.
Right. And here's the thing, Bob. If the cops catch a kid with an ounce of weed in his pocket, they can confiscate his car, his bank accounts, his house. These people...
No, his parents' house. His
right.
Parents' house.
These people pull off grand larceny in the tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, and yet nobody can confiscate a penny from them.
Nope.
Do you see a minor problem here, or am I just crazy?
No, you're not crazy at all. That's the heart and soul of all of this. I don't know when, if ever, the American people have been slapped in the face. I mean, this is a big old mackerel upside the head. You know, this is ours and that's yours, and this is how we treat you, and this is how we get treated.
Right. I mean, what was it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, when they changed the bankruptcy laws for personal bankruptcies, making it virtually impossible for you to wipe out your debts? Why don't they apply those rules to Wall Street? If it's good enough for Main Street, by God, it ought to be good enough for Wall Street.
Hear, hear. But you got to realize that was only personal bankruptcy that was reformed.
Exactly.
They didn't reform corporate bankruptcy. They didn't reform business bankruptcy.
No.
We're the only ones that got reformed. Had your chest cracked last year, can't make the house payment because you're paying the medical bills? Too bad. You're stuck with both of them, debt slave.
Yeah. I mean, if the Democrats actually cared in the slightest for the, quote, common man, which they don't, they would have said, okay, we'll give you your bailout, but we're going to roll back personal bankruptcies to the status quo ante.
Look, I hate to quote him, but some, you know, like I've said all along, the ideas are good. The political shenanigans suck. I heard Nader today, and he was proposing something that's been not just him mentioning it. A number of other people have mentioned it as well. A 1/10 of 1 penny tax.
Right.
On stock transactions would literally raise $500 billion damn near overnight.
Exactly.
And Wall Street could pay for its own bailout. But instead, my kid's ability to go to college is at risk. so somebody can make sure he's got Ocetra caviar 24/7.
Well, not only that, your ability to eat untainted food, because they have to cut back on things like the FDA. We can't have inspections of our food supply.
Oh yeah, by the way, Cossack, we had a little household tragedy the other day.
Oh.
I called Agnes in and I said, "Honey," she heard that tone in my voice and she said, "Yeah, sweetie," and I said, "I got to tell you something." She said, "What?" And I said, "No more Cadbury cream eggs." And she said, "What?" And I said, "Really, why?" I said, "Well, honey, Cadbury has had melamine found in its candies produced in China, and we can't be sure that they haven't come here."
Yeah.
And she said, and I got to tell you, Agnes was hot. Now, she didn't turn purple and cry like she did when she saw the story of Adele Polk. That made her really mad. But she was bummed, you know, because that's one of those little simple pleasures, you know, Cadbury cream eggs. She loves them. I find them repulsive and revolting, but that's me.
Yeah.
I don't do Twinkies either.
I like them too, but.
Well, none for you either.
I know. Well, and the problem of it is, Bob, in 1929, it was the stockbrokers that were jumping out of windows. In 2008, it's the people on Main Street that are killing themselves.
Hey, get out there. Get on that ledge. Get out there.
Yeah. Have you seen that sign from Wall Street? The guy is holding up the sign.
No, what?
Yeah.
Jump?
Jump, you!
Yeah.
F.
Yeah. Yeah, I did see that, as a matter
yeah.
of fact. And, by the way, I'm being reminded that Lottie's telling me that the FDA has announced today, God almighty, that small amounts of melamine are completely acceptable in food.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of course, this is the same FDA that tells you can expect to eat some rat poo in your hot dogs.
Yeah, but they used to have what an acceptable limit was. Now they don't bother looking for it, so.
But oddly enough, country of origin labeling went into effect. I think I saw a story the other day.
October 1st.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the story. Tiny bit of melamine, okay, in most food. You know, I like a little bit of wasabi on my sushi. But you know what? I don't want it in my cornflakes.
Well, yeah, and you don't eat wasabi 3 times a day, every day, for months at a time.
I mean, down here at the New River above the dam, there's catfish in there, Cossack catfish. And catfish caught and cleaned right is delicious and not fishy at all and yummy.
Oh, yeah.
In a normal world, a fellow could go down there and bring back 5 or 6 on a stringer, eat all he wants. But not anymore. You'll wind up mad as a hatter if you do that.
Yeah, mercury.
Sure.
Well, I kind of gave up on catfish when I was a kid. My brother had gone down in Potomac and caught himself a catfish. Big old catfish. Wonderful for dinner. And Mom cleaned it and cooked it up, and we dove in, and I got about 2 forkfuls into it, and I said, "I don't like 3-in-1 oil."
You know at one point in time we lived in a house that had a big, beautiful pond in front of it. It had fish in it and stuff. And it was early in our marriage, and a bunch of my buddies came over one night. And because you'd sit out there at night and you could rip, 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 just full of bullfrogs.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to go gigging. And we did. Got us a bunch. And, you know, didn't even clean them out. I mean, there was jillions of them. Big old fellers. And we were going to have fried frog legs. And I know that'll probably put some people in the audience off, but fact of the matter is they're yummy. If they don't
like
come.
Chicken.
It, yeah, it tastes like chicken.
if they don't come from a pond sitting next to a gas well.
Oh, God.
Those were the vilest, foulest, nastiest, oiliest. I mean, they tasted like crude.
Yeah.
You know, because I, you know, Chef Bob, you know, I dusted them and seasoned them and battered them and fried them and everybody, oh, boy, I can't wait. Bob, what'd you flavor this with? And I bit into one and I said, apparently 10W30. It was nasty. It was just vile. And but that's, you know, that's the American story now. Don't eat the fish. Don't gag the frogs. Let's see. You know, one of the things that may possibly account for the fact that Caribou Barbie is madder than a hatter lies in the fact that mad deer disease runs rampant through the moose and the elk and the deer population. And all you got to do is eat a little bit of nerve tissue. And, you know, that tenderloin lays right next to it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she'll, you know, she, McHoover gets elected, she'll probably wind up running naked down Constitution Avenue. And I don't want to be there, and I don't want anybody with a camera there when it happens either.
Have you looked into those eyes? I mean, there's something wrong.
She's, well, ever since I went to WD-40, she's been winking at me all day. Sadly, yes, I have.
I mean, there is something wrong in that woman's head. There's a wire or two or three loose back in there.
But she's, I don't know, she's what Gertrude Stein said about Oakland, California. You look in those eyes and there's no there there.
Exactly. And what drives me crazy is listening to these people saying, well, she's just a good old everyday mom. We need to, excuse me. Yo, wait a minute. You want this person running around with the football? Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, we are, for the most part. We've got some sort. See, it's. I've seen, and I know you've probably seen them too, Cossack, these articles that say, we've got to take the word elite back. Elite means above average. Elite means good.
Yeah.
Well, there's a whole bunch of America that doesn't want to be above average. There's a whole bunch of America that doesn't want to be good. All in the world they want to do is get from today to tomorrow. And tomorrow they'll think about the one they're in and, you know, just hope that the next one comes. We haven't just dumbed down America. We've broken America's spirit. We've broken America's soul. We've broken America's heart. Well, I mean, not we, but it's been done.
Yeah.
The American people have largely done it to themselves. They've elected morons to the point that they expect that being a moron is the natural state of affairs. If you watch, not just today's debate, Cossack, but any debate, There are some, not a lot, but there are some Congress people that I think are smarter than me and the audience to this program, but not a whole bunch.
No.
The only thing that gets you to Washington is a profound ambition and a hellacious, probably something verging on a personality disorder, and a willingness to do awful things to get there. That's all that gets you to Washington anymore. Listen to the debate. The Senate, you know, the Senate is supposed to be the home of brilliant oratory. It isn't.
It used to be.
It did used to be. But it's not anymore.
I mean, I remember sitting in the gallery and just, it was a thing of beauty to listen to these people actually debate. To hear Everett Dirksen, everybody's favorite grandpa, get up there. And that man could talk brilliantly, without notes, for hours.
Oh, I remember the Watergate hearings.
You know,
Sam Ervin?
Yeah.
I mean, he was all cornpone and country and everything, and the next thing you know, he'd just cornponed you right into an indictment.
Well, he...
Oh, shucks, now I don't want to be seen to be casting any aspersions, but sir... Is it not true that you have repeatedly had intercourse with a number of goats? I don't want to be... Why, yes, sir, I believe that's true. Thank you very much, sir.
I mean, he was a prosecutor for many years, and he was damn good at it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Biden, you know, and that's the thing that Biden was up against last night.
David from South Carolina wrote in earlier today before the show came on. He said, you know, he said, Bob, I'm losing my mind. He said, I'm seeing all these people saying, well, you know, Sarah Palin really held her own last night. He said, they weren't watching the same debate I was watching. Joe Biden mopped the floor with her.
She didn't hold her own. She couldn't answer a single frickin' question.
But that's the thing. Hold her own has been redefined downward. Holding her own meant for the American people that she was not suddenly taken in the slain in the spirit and speaking in tongues and rolling on the floor and hollering, bring me the snake and the strychnine. That's what holding her own meant. The fact that she managed to keep her clothes on, that she didn't just stand there and... She held her own.
I think it would have been more amusing had she done that.
Oh, yeah, the entertainment value would have gone through the roof.
Yeah, I would have paid.
YouTube would have crashed. But, no, she's not. And because it was dummied up, and she, you know, they told her, you know, anytime you get, and it was boxing. She was rope-a-doping. Anytime you get in a corner, honey, just start talking about being a maverick.
Yeah.
I mean, this woman was so rude and so disrespectful that Joe Biden, who's this is the poorest man in the Senate. This is a guy who rides the train home every day. And he actually got choked up. 29 years later, he still gets choked up when he thinks about his first wife and about his children laying there in a hospital bed, hovering between life and death.
Mm-hmm.
And he got choked up about that, and he said, you know, don't tell me about being a single parent. And the one thing she could have done, the one thing any decent human being would have done, would have been to show some human level of empathy or attempt at empathy. But what did she do? The guy chokes up, and she says, "Oh, Joe, oh, see, it don't so ain't so, Joe. There you go, looking at the past again."
Well, what's the old thing? How's the old saying go? We don't know where we have been, we don't know where we are, and we certainly don't know where we're going. Of course you're looking into the past. You have to.
You know, bless his heart, Joe Biden and I, apparently, and a lot of people in this audience, yourself included, share a passion for the Bard. Because the first time she tried that, he whipped out a little Shakespeare. Did you notice that?
Oh, yeah.
Now, Gwen, what's past is prologue. And, you know, you could almost see the smoke coming out of Caribou Barbie's ears or the wheels, ungreased wheels were turning. Is that Flip-Floppians or Ecclesiasticus?
You know, I'm starting to think that these Assemblies of God type are the Fosterites that Heinlein was talking about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, speaking of which, Agnes and I were out somewhere the other day, and I know you'll get a kick out of this, and the other Heinlein fans will too. It was still warm weather, and there was some woman with a low top on, and she walked by, and lo and behold, on the top curve of her right breast was a tattoo of a pair of lips. Foster's kiss.
Yes.
And I looked at Agnes, and Agnes looked at me, and I said, I didn't just, and she said, yes, you did, but we're going to pretend we both didn't.
Oh, God, help me.
Nothing's fiction anymore, Cossack. It's all painfully real.
This is a bad science fiction story, and we're in it.
Well, exactly.
It's going to end badly. Like, I've been reading the Russian media, and we had better really start watching our step because they're quickly losing patience, all kinds of losing patience. They're listening to this shrew trying to lecture them. And I've heard some, Bob, her Russian is horrendous.
She's actually tried to speak it?
Yes. Supposedly she's a Sovietologist. This was when she got her doctorate degree.
Oh, you're talking about Dr. Rice.
Yes, that's
true. Oh, I thought you were talking about the other shrew.
No.
Because I could just hear her say, das vidanya, by golly.
Oh, God. No, Rice. I mean, the supposed academic. God, it's horrible. It's hardly recognizable. that bad.
So she's speaking Russian with a I don't know. Where's the bad Russian spoken? Where's the Russian spoken at the Muscovites turn and point?
George.
Georgia. Well, yeah. Why, yeah. Only nobody turned and pointed at Joseph Stalin. Suddenly he had a charming accent. I understand.
Yeah. But I mean, just horrendous. I mean, very, very bad. Especially for someone who, you know, this is their area of expertise.
Yeah, go back to playing the piano, kind of sleazy.
Yeah. She'd be much better off with that. That they can respect. And plus this crap about, we don't go around invading countries in the 21st century. And they're going, excuse me.
Please do allow me to point out the fact that what you're saying is not true. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we don't go tearing pieces off of countries. Excuse me? What did you do with Kosovo? Didn't we tell you not to do that? Didn't we tell you you were opening a can of worms?
Well, and then I expect that every old veteran of the Soviet military is sitting around in a perpetual power snicker right now over Afghanistan. Idiots.
Uh-huh.
We could have told them, but they did not ask. Yeah, but my Russian accent, I shouldn't be doing that because my phony Russian accent's no good either.
Oh, it's not bad. Better than Condi. Trust me.
Well, it all begins and ends for me with Captain. It was terrible. They put things in our ears. So, you know, that's an accent based on an accent based on an accent. So it can't help but be a big fraud.
But actually, Koenig is Russian.
No, that's what. Well, is he? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, Koenig, sure. I thought that was German.
It is. But there was a large community of Germans that moved to Russia under Peter the Great.
Ah.
That's where he came from.
Yeah, well, Peter the Great brought a lot of people from elsewhere. He was
correct.
Literally hell-bent on dragging Russia into the 15th century or something.
17th,
but he was just happy to get him to the 15th. That's what I'm getting
right.
at.
Yeah. But, Koenig is a hell of a lot of fun. He's a fun drunk. Ran into him at a couple of conventions. He's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Well, I'll tell you what, Cossack, I got to roll along, brother, but have yourself a great weekend, will you?
You too, sir.
All right, and I'm going to try to get in touch with John Fox after this is all over, and we'll work out some of the details for Sunday, but I'm crossing my fingers for us going live.
Oh, that'll be good.
All right, then. You take it easy, brother.
All right, take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's Cossack down in Florida. Tear it up, Bob. It's paid for. Just knocked the phone off the cradle. So, that really is pretty much the program. I'm sorry it's been kind of hit or miss, and, well, you know what? When you sit there and you prep for a show and then everything goes sideways, what are you going to do? It will throw you off your game. Does this ever happen to Jon Stewart? Not that I'm in the same league with or anything, but does this ever happen to Keith Olbermann? I mean, not that I'm comparing myself, right? Did this ever happen to the guys on Hee Haw? There we go. No, I'm not as funny as they are. But it is frustrating. Not that that's a sufficient excuse, but it is frustrating. Not an excuse. So that's where we wind up this evening. Let me beat this one over the head one more time. We are going to try to go live from the Mountain Blessing. I got to drive up tomorrow and see if I've got cell signal up there. It's pretty close to a tower. That ought to help. We're going to try to broadcast live starting about 3 o'clock Eastern time. I've already told Ben about it, and John and I are going to work out the technical details. Don't forget, of course, our weekend schedule. We have Billy Shears coming your way, 9 p.m. Saturday evening. Before that, the Rick Smith Show and Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. Sunday night, the new incarnation of John Fox's All Foxed Up. That's at 9 p.m. Eastern time. He follows on the heels of Rama's Help Me, I'm an American, which is a great show, by the way. If you're not, join in the chat room. There's a lot of folks listening and so forth. Rama does a great job. It's a wonderful show. So all of that's coming up this weekend, and then 3 p.m. on Sunday, God willing, the creek don't rise, and everything works out, and the batteries don't die, and the coal thugs don't, you know, get us. We'll be there at the mountain blessing, and you'll get to be there, and you'll have to put it together what it looks like in your mind, at least until we get the video uploaded to YouTube, because we'll be shooting it too. So thank you, everyone, for one last programming announcement. There will be some weirdness next week. Wednesday, I'm definitely out Thursday. I'm not trying to be gross or anything, but I have a colonoscopy. Yeah, I'm a 45-year-old guy. You're supposed to have those every 5 years after 40. And this is the time. Oh, joy. Otherwise known as the steel eel. I'll be out Thursday getting the steel eel. I mean, I'll be home with any luck by probably no later than noon, but I will be whacked out of my ever-loving mind. I use the good drugs for that stuff, and you can probably imagine why. Wednesday is what they call prep day. I won't be able to be in the studio, if you get my meaning. I'll be elsewhere. So Wednesday and Thursday are the days where all of that is concerned, where the schedule is concerned. Monday, however, tentatively scheduled, because anytime I schedule a guest on this program, it's tentative until we see what is going to go, if anything is going to go south or south sideways or sideways south or whatever. But Monday, at the very top of the program, tentatively scheduled, the author of The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, Vincent Bugliosi, will join us for a conversation regarding his theory, as well as the book itself, without giving away the good parts, of course, because we want you to buy the book. So that's all headed your way. That's what next week looks like. Thank you to Peter Godbold, who has earned a fabulous, what I hope is a fabulous vacation, and hope he's enjoying it. He's our IT professional. Thank you to John Fox, our chief engineer, who is even willing to get up in literally the middle of the night to engineer a program. Thank you, John Fox. Ben Birch literally single-handedly saved liberal talk on the Internet starting about 2002 with his determination to more widely disseminate Internet, liberal radio in general. He did it and does it at WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben never sends a bill. And, of course, many of our thanks, our deep, heartfelt thanks, go out to Coal River Mountain Watch, the bravest, hardest-working people I know, crmw.net. I hope to get together with some of the Coal River gang tomorrow evening in Beckley. It's chili night in Beckley, and there's going to be all kinds of chili and fixings going on, and politicians working the crowd, and who knows what. And I'm hoping to see some of the folks from Coal River Mountain Watch there. I'm going to be going over there tomorrow evening. Agnes, me, the kids. Thanks to them. Because after all, what they're doing has a lot to do with making your life, your children's lives, your grandchildren's lives, and progeny as yet undreamt of, making their lives better by far. Because we are all downstream, and we are all downwind from mountaintop removal. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.